Ho. Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pause, a podcast on poems from a cowshed in West Wales. We are quite crazy for poetry, and each podcast we discuss and examine a poem one of us loves, then attempt to write a response to the poem. You're most welcome to join in with these attempts too, and send them over to us in our Facebook group. We are Emma Nailed Baines.
Hello.
Jean, the Venerable Riley.
Hello.
And I'm Philippa Nuts and Bolts Davis. Now, Emma, you are in the grand chair of decision today. What have you brought?
I have brought For Forest by Grace Nichols.
Okay, take it away.
Forest could keep secrets. Forest could keep secrets. Forest tune in every day to water sound and bird sound. Forest letting her hair down to the teeming creeping of her forest ground. But Forest don't broadcast her business. No, Forest cover her business down from sky and fast eye sun. And when night come and darkness wrap her like a gown, Forest is a bad dream woman. Forest dreaming about mountain and when earth was young. Forest dreaming of the caress of gold. Forest roosting with mysterious Eldorado. And when howler monkey wake her up with howl, Forest just stretch and stir to a new day of sound. But coming back to secrets, Forest could keep secrets. Forest could keep secrets. And we must keep Forest.
Ooh, that's very good. Lovely poem. Why did you pick it?
Well, I picked it because Grace Nichols was a poet who I discovered while I was still at school. And lots of these poets stay with me who I discovered earlier in my life. I found her through the Fat Black Woman's poems. A poem that really stood out for me there was Be a Butterfly. Just on the cusp of adulthood, the don't be a caterpillar, be a butterfly.
Great.
It just really stays with me. And the way the lines repeat is kind of a theme throughout her work, this kind of rhythm, dialect, repetition. And so this really stood out for me, this poem, For Forest.
And is that one of her books, The Fat Black Woman's Poems?
Yes.
Fantastic
yes.
title, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds really modern, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Did you like it, Jean?
I did like it, and it makes me think that it was a fairly recent poem. It speaks of climate emergency that we have today. She ends with, "We must keep forest." And it evokes such a lush forest, expansive. And because we are aware of forests condensing, constricting, contracting, it's all the more beautiful, I think.
Yeah, this is a very vital, lush forest, isn't it? I mean, very almost sensual, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can almost see a sort of heavy-limbed woman kind of moving her way through the poem. The rhythm is very marked in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's great. So what do we know about Grace?
She was born in Guyana in 1950. And moved to the UK in 1977. Her work is influenced by the history and culture of her homeland, in particular the oral storytelling tradition with its fantastic folk tales. And I think that's something that really comes across in her work. We get a real flavour of where she came from and where she is now. And the poems are her, they're unique to her. And the voice is very female as well.
Ivor the dog is very taken with this poem because he sort of stuck his nose on my hand now, which is a sign that he really likes something, but we probably shouldn't talk about him and then he might go away. It's really, really evocative, isn't it? Have you read a lot of her other poems? And is there a lot of variety or...?
Yes, I've dipped into poems written from probably the mid-1980s up until the present day, but her voice is very strong through all of them. Hang on, I've got to think of the word... Well, it is very female and it's very rooted in nature and it's very lush. One that comes to mind is Beauty. Beauty is a fat black woman walking the fields, pressing a breezed hibiscus to her cheek. Mm. It's just so...
beautiful image.
Yeah.
Yes, and very sensual, isn't it? Mm. Yeah.
Grace grew up in a small country village along the Atlantic coast, she said, in Guyana. And she said it remains a very magical place in her consciousness. She said, my creativity is linked to where I grew up, that small country village in my childhood. I don't know how far away the forest was, but perhaps the forest met the village, I like to think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because she's married to, is it John Agard, who's a poet and a playwright as well?
Mm. And she, I think, worked with Linton Kwesi Johnson as well, another similar kind of poet that uses the wonderful language from the Caribbean combined with English.
It's interesting, isn't it, reading a poem like this? I've heard her reading this, and it's really made me want to go and see her live.
Yeah.
Forests could keep secrets. Forests could keep secrets. Forests tune in every day to water sound and bird sound. Forest letting her hair down to the teeming creeping of her forest ground.
You read it in your own accent, which I think is entirely the appropriate
thing to do. I couldn't possibly do her justice.
No, you couldn't. It is interesting, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
How the extent to which, would we call it dialect or would we call it, it's not patois, is it?
It's Creole.
It's Creole. So it's a distinctive language, isn't it? Mm. So when you read it in a different accent, do you lose rhythm or do you read it in a different way? Because one thing I thought about your reading, which is really great, was that you didn't deliver it like she did, because she does a big theatrical sign-off, which you can listen to now.
Forests could keep secrets. Forests could keep secrets. And we must keep forest.
You delivered it in Emma's way, and as a result, I think we hear the poem more strongly.
I don't know. I think part of the poem is her voice, though, that it's her poem.
Yes.
But I suppose with any poem, really, a lot of the time you come to it on a page and you take it for yourself, don't you? So
Yeah.
You haven't always heard the poet,
no,
have you?
Yeah.
We're lucky enough to have heard her, of course. But she said that she marries the language of Creole, her homeland language, with English and finds new linguistic possibilities, which brings more music into it.
Yeah, because it's certainly not excluding in any way, is it?
No.
And it's poetry that, I mean, there is something very childlike and playful about it. And I know she has written a lot for children.
Yes.
She's really cross-generational in her appeal, I think, because of that rhythm and playfulness and sort of use of words. Mm. And the Creole doesn't exclude anybody at all.
No.
But that is a decision for poets or any sort of writer, isn't it? If you are using your own dialect, to what extent are you then limiting who you write for? And you may want to do that anyway. Do you have views?
I don't feel this is in any way exclusive. It's a lovely mixture of images and dialect, and I think it brings it to life.
Mm.
She describes this herself in her poem Epilogue, where she writes, I have crossed an ocean, I have lost a tongue, from the root of the old one, a new one has sprung. She's really celebratory. She revels in the way life fluctuates and changes, and, you know, she's very optimistic and joyful.
Yeah, she said it's complex and beautiful, and having both to draw on is very exciting as a poet. She trusts her instinct all the way through the poem, and it's an exciting venture. You don't know where the poems will end up. She says, I look back at the poems and I see them as my children, and they form their own futures. You let them go and let people interpret how they will. They're meant to be shared.
Great. About who else do we know who writes in distinctive dialect?
Benjamin Zephaniah.
Oh, Zephaniah.
It's kind of Birmingham with Caribbean, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's a poet called Lorna Goodison who's Caribbean, but she went to stay in Canada. So she has a slightly different mix.
Anything else to say about Grace and what she's doing?
I find the personification of the forest really interesting, and how she kind of touches on lots of very topical issues, such as, I don't know whether this is intentional, but things like social media use. You know, Forrest don't broadcast her business.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. This is quite a recent poem, isn't it? Yes, of course it is, yes.
And how she keeps secrets, like you can go and speak to the forest and she will absorb it, like almost like carbon dioxide.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it's a fantastic poem, and really benefits from hearing it's spoken aloud, I think.
Yeah.
So have we had a go at responses?
Yes, we have.
So who'd like to kick off?
Who's going to kick off?
Jean, can we hear yours first?
This poem is about moving an environment. To install it, to tempt a lost loved one with whom one has shared that environment.
So environment and person linked together.
Yes. Love's installation. Green flanks, thoroughbreders, horses. I've set them up here for you. Lifted a valley, a rising escarpment, grey metal snakes passed here for you. Caught your warm vowels, hung in the air, to wind chime here for you. Your talk, fast-paced, fast-tracked, digital, chases its tail here for you. Lightning on scaffold, breaks open skylights, champagne is served here for you. Love's installation with a new blue shoreline, black shale, purple sandstone, silver slate, waits here for you.
Oh, that's a lovely idea for a poem. So lovely.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's that environment is full of meaning for that person, isn't it?
It's actually a response to another poem of Grace's, Pray Song for My Mother, where she's likening her mother's best qualities to the best quality of the environment in the Caribbean where she moved from. So it was just about an environment.
It's a lovely poem. Okay, do you want to go next, Emma, or shall I? You go next, go on.
So I looked at the idea of dialect. There's a very specific dialect from the part of the world I come from, Pembrokeshire. And lots of the words that I've used in this poem, I remember my grandparents using, and lots of the words I still use. And I don't know if they make sense outside of Pembrokeshire, but I'm hoping that the poem will carry them along. It's called Below the Lansker. When you're bad, in a caffle, cack-handed and low, push your feet through the humus to the deep down below. When the skirp turns heavy, starts emptying down, let the dirty drops slop over leaves on the ground, and the wintering tears drip to silver frost candles that silhouette trees and stipple the brambles. Let them point out the shoots where the pennywigs creep, chopsy as hell while the earth lies asleep. Over by there, through the bark-spun lichen, hums the truth of the soil, through the buds that awaken, to stretch out their arms in far-reaching boughs that tickle the sky as your soles touch their toes. When you're bad, in a caffle, cack-handed and kiffed, let the wings of the homebird give you a lift, and set you back down where the catchy pools wriggled, spawned with new legs, to launch green from the struggle.
That's great. Some of those words are amazing. So tell us a little bit about what the Landskir is. What does the title mean?
So the Landskir line is a kind of division across Pembrokeshire. And it's kind of marked by a row of castles, Norman castles. And to the north of it are mostly Welsh-speaking people. And below the Landskir, which South Pembrokeshire, so where I'm from, are mostly English-speaking people, but with kind of strange little words for things that have lasted over the years.
And lots of them, because... I'm not from that far away, maybe 20, 25 miles away, but I don't recognise any of those words.
Oh, don't you?
I do not.
Okay, so there's still things in everyday language like caffle, which means kind of tangled up.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. And kift, which means kind of... how do you describe kift? Kind of out of sorts, or sometimes clumsy as well.
It's fascinating because if you said to me, what do you think is the etymological origin of caffle and kift, I would probably say Scotland.
Mm.
They don't sound Welsh at all, do they?
No.
Amazing. I wonder where they come from.
I don't know.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
So those are still in my everyday use. There are some like catchy poles, which are tadpoles, which I don't use. But there's lots there are lots more that I remember my grandparents using that probably wouldn't make sense to my children.
And they really add to the atmosphere. I didn't know what they meant, and it kind of didn't matter really because it's quite a lot of mystery in that poem, isn't there? And it just added to that.
And a touch of Edward Lear, actually.
I was going to say, that when I read it back, and kind of things like the Jabberwocky.
Absolutely, yeah. Fascinating, really interesting. That's very good.
Shall we hear yours, Pippa?
Yes, mine is very short and quite a crude response really to Grace. Okay, so it's called Hwyl and Hiraeth. Hwyl swirls in through fag smug, beer fumes, cracked voices. Shemai, iechyd da, gweud y gwir. Who beat the English? Hwyl hoiks up her volume. A deranged DJ brings bright to eye, pink to cheek, compulsion to touch. Then she's gone. And like a commoner at a royal wedding, her mate Hiraeth shuffles in on mawkish mission. Dere nôl, Hwyl, cries a forgotten baby in the corner.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's beautiful. I love it. I love the thought of Hwyl as an entity.
Yes.
You know, it's just...
For people who don't speak Welsh.
Hwyl is a
Welsh sense of spirit, isn't it? Based on community, really, and having the crack, in a way, you would say in a crack, in Irish, wouldn't you? Everybody getting together and having a really jolly sense of conviviality. Yes. So that's Hwyl. And Hiraeth is a kind of poignant longing for the homeland, really. So, you know, this poem, I suppose, is inspired by a typical Welsh wedding where people probably would be smoking even today. people going, depending on general levels of alcohol consumed, from being in very good spirits to then getting a bit maudlin.
So what is the other line halfway down?
That is, Shemai iechyd da gweud y gwir. That is, how are you? Cheers, and to tell the truth. And gweud y gwir is something that people say a lot in Welsh, don't they? It's a kind of colloquialism. It means, to tell the truth, or honestly, yes, when they're probably not being honest at all. Mm. And Who Beat the English is a very popular song.
Yeah.
When you're small, you've got to remember all your triumphs. So that's it, really. You know, it's the same scene you might see in the pub, isn't it? You know, so very
typical. Yeah. Mm. But I love that language, the play of the language.
It's a very optimistic poem as well, the way Hwyl can cut through everything else that's going on. And when it's not there, it's missed.
Yes. Well, it does come in like a wave, doesn't it? I mean, when you experience being in the hoyle, which, you know, you don't have to be Welsh to experience it, but it does come quite suddenly. You notice, don't you, at a sort of social gathering or in a social place, oh, everybody's in a really good mood now and everything here is very convivial and you're sort of seeing the best of human nature for a while. So, well, thank you, Grace. She certainly inspired us.
And I was just thinking
it's, you know, it's interesting. I was at this workshop the other day with the marvellous Raymond Antrobus, and one of the questions he asked us all was, how important is your country of origin to what you write about in poetry? And it does beg that question, doesn't it?
Yeah,
indeed.
So if we were trying to think of something to help ourselves be more grace in our poetry, what have we done in these poems, do you think, that we could sort of specify technically?
I think to look for rhythm in the language more, perhaps.
Yeah.
You have both used Welsh in yours, or would you call that yours Welsh or Pembrokeshire? Yes, origins of. I haven't got another language to do that with, but to find ways of bringing more the rhythm.
Yes.
More rhythm, and she got rhyme in there. Quite a lot of repetitive, isn't there? Repetition.
There's rhyme and half rhyme.
Yes, there is, isn't there? Bird sound, down, ground.
It sounds like a song, doesn't it? Do you know, it sounds like the rhythm is such, and her delivery is such. It does, and there's a sort of refrain at the beginning, refrain at the end. And I suppose anyone writing a poem can take some key elements from the culture or country into which they were born and say, these are vivid for me, and now how do I weave these into something that means a lot and perhaps personify something in it that isn't necessarily a person.
Yes.
So, and also have fun. I mean, I think the thing about your poem, Emma, is it's just huge fun.
Well, it's not like anything I would normally write. The it rhymes a lot more than. But I just thought it was fun to experiment with the
it's
dialect.
It's wordplay and rhythm. Yeah, great. So, Grace, thank you very much for encouraging us to play
so well,
and so enjoyably. Good. So we finished here. We hope you enjoyed listening, and we look forward to listening and maybe talking to you online at our next In Our Lives episode.